This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Just weeks after a U.S. Court of Appeals struck down North Carolina's onerous voting law, which disproportionately impacted African Americans, the Republican-dominated state legislature has decided to defy the ruling. North Carolina has now asked the U.S. Supreme Court to reinstate three of the law's provisions just for this November's elections. Meanwhile, the News and Observer just published what many are calling a smoking gun email from the North Carolina GOP Executive Director Dallas Woodhouse, who called for, quote, party line changes to voting rules. My guest is Ari Berman. He is a contributing writer for The Nation magazine, an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He's also the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Welcome to the program, Ari.
Hi, Sonali. Good to talk to you again.
So first, let's talk about what exactly these three provisions are that North Carolina would like to reinstate. Apparently, the Federal Court of Appeals decision is just not palatable to the Republican Party.
So they're asking to reinstate the state's strict voter ID law, the cutbacks to early voting, and get rid of pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds.
So aren't those among the most egregious parts of the law to begin with, particularly the voter ID part?
They're all egregious. I mean, the reason that the North Carolina law is so egregious in the first place is because they didn't just do one thing. They didn't just do voter ID. They did voter ID, and then they cut back early voting. They eliminated same-day voter registration. They eliminated pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. They eliminated out-of-precinct voting. So all of these things separately would be scandalous, but put together, they really amount to the worst voting restrictions in the country.
So they've specifically asked the Supreme Court, and they waited just over 2 weeks after the Federal Court of Appeals to do this Federal Court of Appeals ruling. They specifically asked the Supreme Court, what now? I mean, does the Supreme Court, is it expected to respond right away? Can it simply ignore North Carolina's request?
Well, I think they'll do something with it. They have asked the plaintiffs in the case to file a response. But, I mean, the fact that North Carolina waited 17 days after the Fourth Circuit's opinion and then said that this is too close to the election kind of undercuts their own argument. Because if it was so urgent, why did they wait 17 days to file this brief? And not only that, but the dynamics on the Supreme Court are very, very different now. Instead of a 5-4 conservative-dominated Supreme Court, we have a deadlocked 4-4 Supreme Court, which means that in most cases, the lower court decisions will stand. So one of the judges on the left side of the court would have to defect here to reinstate North Carolina's law, and I think that's pretty unlikely.
Now, the Republicans in North Carolina have hired an interesting lawyer to represent them. Tell us a little bit about Paul Clement.
Well, I mean, Paul Clement is really one of the biggest guns in the Republican Party. He was Solicitor General in the George W. Bush administration, and he is someone who has argued against Obamacare before the Supreme Court for the Defense of Marriage Act. And it's interesting, North Carolina has already spent $5 million in taxpayer money defending making it harder to vote, and now they're probably going to spend a few million more defending a law that is very unpopular. And so I think this is really outrageous that they were found guilty of blatantly and intentionally suppressing voters, and they keep spending more money defending the law as opposed to admitting that they were wrong.
How successful a lawyer is Paul Clement if he argued against Obamacare and the Defense of Marriage Act? Obamacare is still standing, most of it, and the Defense of Marriage Act has been undone.
Well, he's won a lot of cases, so I don't have his full list of cases in front of you, but people are paying him good money for a reason.
Now, why specifically are North Carolina Republicans so worried? Can you paint a background for our audience with respect to Obama's wins in that state in 2008 in particular?
Yeah, so you have to remember that North Carolina has just recently become a swing state in presidential elections, and Barack Obama carried the state by only 14,000 votes in 2008. And that really shocked a lot of people. And it really worried lots of North Carolina Republicans, because what happened in 2008 and again in 2012 is that black voter turnout and black voter registration outpaced white voter turnout and white voter registration for the first time in North Carolina's history. And that was possible because North Carolina had adopted reforms like early voting and same-day voter registration to bring more people into the political process. This was good for everybody broadly, but it had a particularly beneficial effect on African-American voters who had historically been disenfranchised in the state. And so North Carolina Republicans targeted the very methods that African-Americans had used to increase political participation. That's why the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals said that North Carolina Republicans had targeted black voters with, quote, almost surgical precision. And in fact, they are still doing this. Even after the court has said, restore a week of early voting, North Carolina Republicans are now blatantly trying to cut early voting in all 100 counties across the state. So even after the court tells them to stop discriminating, they're still doing it.
It's interesting to hear some of the justifications being offered. The standard one, of course, has been the potential for voter fraud and this idea that the more opportunities there are to vote, the more opportunities there are for fraud. Well, obviously, the more opportunities there are to vote, the more people will actually vote. I mean, that's the bigger correlation, right?
Yeah, there's no evidence that increasing the opportunity to vote leads to higher incidence of voter fraud. For example, states like Minnesota have had election day registration for decades, and they have among the lowest numbers of fraud in the country. So the idea that when you adopt things like early voting, when you adopt things like same-day voter registration, they lead to fraud, I think is really a myth. What's happened is that these things have led more people to participate. Republicans view that as a bad thing for their party, and so they've concocted different reasons for trying to cut back on these voting methods. But I think the voter fraud argument is really a pretext for their real agenda, which is to try to make the electorate older, whiter, and more conservative, as opposed to younger, more progressive, and more diverse.
Now, the Federal Court of Appeals ruling that happened earlier this month was very specifically, it cited some of the, the very clear ways in which Republicans went after Democratic voters, specifically African-American voters, because they looked at data where African Americans had more higher voting rates and then specifically targeted those. There's another smoking gun that just emerged with this email from Dallas Woodhouse that I cited. You've also cited it in your Nation piece. Tell us a little bit about what this internal email that's just been leaked says about North Carolina's GOP.
So basically what happened is the Fourth Circuit restored a week of early voting in North Carolina. North Carolina previously had 17 days of early voting. They cut it back to 10, and now it's been restored to 17. However, every county in North Carolina, all 100 counties, now are meeting to decide what their early voting hours will be, because the Fourth Circuit didn't say that you have to have X number of days and X number of hours. They let the counties decide it. So this has created a really chaotic situation. And what has happened is the executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party emailed all of the local boards of elections, because Republicans have a majority in every single county by virtue of holding the governor's office, which is a very unique situation in the state. And the executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party said that they should limit early voting days so that there's less time for same-day voter registration, that they should eliminate Sunday voting, basically because they don't like it. But the real reason is because that's when African-American churches mobilize their constituents. And the third thing they should do is prevent polling sites on college campuses, because students already have too much opportunity to vote. I mean, this is so unbelievably outrageous. I honestly can't even believe someone would be so idiotic to put this in writing after the Fourth Circuit has just said that these very type of things are discriminatory.
Right, and he actually just spelled out, let Republicans should feel empowered to basically make changes that are supported by Republicans, to make party line changes to early voting. You can't get much clearer than that. I mean, can you imagine if the Democrats were caught doing this? This would become a national scandal. This would be something that the Fox News would beat its drums on, and it would suddenly, require some kind of Justice Department investigation.
Absolutely. And, quite frankly, I've been trying to get more media coverage about this, but this has been a very undercovered story, because North Carolina is one of the most competitive states in the country this year, not just the presidential race, but they have an incredibly important governor's race. Remember, it was Governor Pat McCrory who signed HB 2, which sparked a national outcry. They have a competitive race for U.S. Senate. Senate now. They have a competitive race for Attorney General. They have so many competitive races in North Carolina. This is not just about the race between Clinton and Trump. It's about all of these other races too, and the GOP trying to gain an advantage. And they've been so blatant about it. I mean, to have the Fourth Circuit say that Republicans intentionally discriminated, and then for the head of the Republican Party in the state to say that they should continue doing those very types of discrimination. One thing I want to point out is that the Fourth Circuit said that North Carolina was engaged in intentional discrimination. They had an option to basically bail North Carolina back into the Voting Rights Act so that North Carolina would have to approve their voting changes once again with the federal government. You can do that if a court finds you guilty of intentional discrimination. The Fourth Circuit did not do that. They let North Carolina off the hook. However, based on the actions of the Republican Party following this decision, I believe that North Carolina should be bailed back in because they have shown that even when they're found guilty of discrimination, they will keep discriminating, and they can't be trusted to make their own voting changes.
Right, Ari, and that's so important to point out that a lot of this goes back to the Supreme Court decision that gutted the specific section of the Voting Rights Act that was attempting to hold states exactly like North Carolina accountable for changes to voting laws that would disproportionately impact certain communities. Okay, so going back to the Supreme Court, which was the discussion we started out with a court sans Scalia, what do you expect will happen? It could be that there'll just be a 4-4 decision along political beliefs, political ideals, and then it would go back to the Federal Court of Appeals decision, which would favor Democrats? Or I should just say favor fair voting?
I think that basically in all of these cases, the Supreme Court is going to deadlock. And so whatever the appeals courts do will be the final word. In some cases, that will be a good thing for voting rights, like in North Carolina. In other states like Wisconsin, where there have been very conservative appeals court justices that have upheld things like voter ID laws, that could be a bad thing. So I think the deadlock on the Supreme Court in the short term is good in some senses for voting rights, but I think the fact that the Supreme Court is not even a factor anymore is disturbing. And remember, Merrick Garland is out there waiting to be confirmed by the Senate right now. And if the Senate did its job like it considered every other previous nominee in history, Merrick Garland would be on the Supreme Court right now, and there would be a 5-4 center-left majority instead of a 4-4 deadlock court. So I think it's really important to point that out, that there could actually be a majority in favor of protecting voting rights, but Senate Republicans have refused to act.
Right. Merrick Garland being, of course, the Obama nominee for the Supreme Court to replace Antonin Scalia. Overall, nationwide, is North Carolina the biggest flashpoint on the battle over voting rights, or are there other states right now that we should be paying attention to as we head into November, not just for the presidential race, as you rightly point out, there's a ton of down ballot races that could be quite close in states around the country.
There's a bunch of different states that are important. 15 states have new restrictions in place for the first time in 2016. What we're seeing is that even after these court decisions, there are still battles over voting rights in states like North Carolina, but there are other places like Wisconsin that have new restrictions in effect and also cases that are working their way through the courts. There are states like Virginia that have new voter ID laws, and not only that, but in Virginia, ex-felons lost the right to vote because of what the Virginia Supreme Court recently did. In Ohio, there is a voter purge case that's being challenged. Also, the reinstatement of early voting and same-day registration is being appealed there. So there's a bunch of different places. And then in some states like Texas, where their voter ID law has been softened, we have to see how that's really going to work in practice. Will people still be able to vote? So there's a lot of different places where this is going on. I think North Carolina has become a flashpoint just because Republicans there have just been so unbelievably brazen in terms of their actions.
And then also we should remember that voting laws in combination with gerrymandered districts, that combination is very much skewed towards Republican victories because it's primarily Republicans that are taking the lead on these issues, right?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans just control the redistricting process after the 2010 election in so many more states than Democrats that they were able to do really precise gerrymandering. And that's one reason why, despite the incredible collapse so far of Donald Trump, the House isn't even viewed as competitive. You would think in a year that the Republican candidate for president is trailing by double digits in swing states like Virginia and Colorado, that the House would be immediately in play. But the fact is that these districts are so safe, there are still only about 10 to 20 competitive races for the U.S. House, even in a year when their Republican candidate for president is running a historically terrible campaign with historically terrible numbers about among pretty much every demographic group.
And we would have a completely different political landscape than if things like voting and districting were fair and actually democratic. It would be a different country I think we'd be living in. Ari, where's the best place for people to read your writings?
They can read me at thenation.com. They can go to my website, which is ari-berman.com, and they can find me on Twitter at Ari Berman.
We'll post all of those links to our website later today. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Ari Berman is a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. And he's also the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.